Welcome to Lending Forward, a podcast where we're lending every bit of what we know to our listeners. From real conversations and lessons learned deep within the industry to education and forward thinking. Together, we're lending forward. And as always, don't forget to subscribe to our channels and connect with us on www.atlanticbay.com. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSConsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 203, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23452.
Thank you so much for being on Lending Forward, Kirsten. We're so excited to see you. We know your name. We know your name from Bravo. People might know your name from Fox, the New York Times, Bloomberg, Forbes. You have been so many places, and we're so happy that you landed here today. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Me too. Well, for listeners who might not know too much about you, tell us kind of where you started in real estate and how it's kind of fueled your passion for so many different pieces, right? TV and being a news right. on a newscast. Like, you know, is that kind of where you thought your life would go? Tell us all the nuts and bolts.
What I think happened with me is that, you know, when I got out of college, I thought, I think like everybody who gets out of college, who's ambitious and like has high energy and is excited, I think people tell you in your life, when you have good people skills, they're always like, you're going to be great. It's going to be awesome out there for you. Don't you worry, whatever you do, you're going to be successful at. And I think I was kind of told that as a kid and in high school, I was, you know, good student. I was an athlete. You know, I had all that stuff going for me. And I definitely in college got lost and didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I think that's probably the biggest issue with people who are high energy and passionate is that you become multi-passionate and that's not really conducive to picking and focusing, right? Because nobody says, hey, if you're nobody ever says to somebody in college, hey, if you have so many passions, you should just do business because no matter what, one of your passions is probably going to translate into you wanting to do business. Why don't you do that? It's always kind of like, oh, well, maybe do this, maybe do that. And it's always really focused on like where they're coming from and what they are looking for, you know, what they want for themselves. And I think what ended up happening is I graduated from college. I got a degree in geography. I went to Chicago. I fell flat on my face. Like I didn't find a job that was interesting. I thought I maybe wanted to go into event planning because it sounded cool.
Right.
Turned out it was a lot of data entry. So that wasn't really great. And then I bounced around. I worked in coffee shops. I worked for a photographer. You just kind of end up doing tons of odd jobs, you know, because you're kind of trying to get your feet wet. And then it's so disappointing what's in the corporate world when when I was like getting started that it wasn't, I thought, I can't do this. I can't be in a normal work environment because I have so much energy and I need to be with people. And this is just so stifling. I'd rather wait tables and at least be with people and run around, which I think anybody who wants to wait tables, I think it's an incredible opportunity and it's great to learn, but it's not something as a lifestyle that's healthy or good for getting you to that next step. It's the kind of thing where you need to have as a stopgap, right? For something else. Exactly. So what ended up happening is I loved Italy because I studied abroad in Italy. And so what I did was I quit all my jobs in Chicago, sold all my belongings, and I went and slept on a friend's couch in Milan with my suitcase to stay there. And until I found a job working for a family living in Milan, and I ended up staying in Italy for 2 years. I bounced around there as well, but I ended up eventually in sales, doing sales for an agency that had designs that they would license for greeting cards and wrapping paper. So it was like a super basic kind of thing. And I think in that journey, it was kind of like, oh, this sales thing might work because there's a lot of interaction with other people. Sure. Right. And there's a lot of results driven kind of thing. And what was interesting about living in Italy is you make so little money and the sales commissions are totally different there because people want more stability than they want that high growth. So I got paid very little and I realized like, oh wow, if I did the same job in the US, I'd probably make a lot more money, you know, because the US, there's just so much more room to make real money, which I think a lot of us forget, like the rest of the world doesn't have our salaries. Even if you live in the middle of nowhere in the US right now with virtual, you know, possibilities, you're making more money than most entry-level people in Europe, that's for sure, mm-hmm. especially in places like Italy and Spain and Portugal and things like that. Right. So I liked that. And so when I came home after, you know, kind of like licking my wounds, like eventually it was like, I'm running out of money here because I'm not making any money. I'm having a really good time. You know, there's a lot of reasons I need to come home. So I came home and I decided to get my real estate license because my stepfather said, what you should do is if now that you like sales, pick an item that's a big ticket item so that no matter how many sales you do, they're significant every time you do a sale.
Right.
So that's what I did. So I got into real estate in Manhattan and it was the right move. I started in the bottom of the market in 2008 and I worked for a team for 6 months before it was pretty clear that that wasn't going to work as far as where I was going to really get the best foundations from. And so, and also I didn't, the income wise, it was going to be really tough. So I ended up going and working as an apprentice for somebody else for a long time. I was her assistant for 5 years. And then after that, I ended up staying on her team for another 4 years until I went to Compass. So what ended up getting me into the business was this idea of sales, mm-hmm. of working on larger transaction, you know, prices. So the idea mm-hmm. of making real money off of your commissions. And then I was lucky because I ended up getting into luxury directly by, you know, working in Manhattan, which is inherently a luxury market by the average price point of an apartment, and kind of being propelled in that direction.
And you have, I mean, exceptionally propelled through so many different, you've been afforded so many different things that you worked your butt off for, I'm sure of it. And I think, so we're located in 12 states right now. We're headquartered in Virginia Beach, you know, just being able to see the flourishment that you've done up in New York City, that's huge. But we're all, no matter where you are, it really boils down to what we were talking about before, the back to the basics, and it's selling, right? And it's, how do you interact with humans? What are you doing to keep them educated? And that copy pastes throughout wherever you are when it comes to sales. So, you know, from what you've seen in the industry, what would you say we should be talking about to buyers right now?
Well, what we need to talk about right now is that inflation, probably the effects of inflation when it comes to real estate, I don't think is going to come down quickly at all, because the truth is it's a hard asset. It's one of the hard assets that people still needed. It's not like cryptocurrency where it disappeared and nobody really needed it. So it's not the kind of thing that people are going to fight to bring back. Mm-hmm. I think that market will end up consolidating into, you know, clearly a few players, because it's not going to disappear because it's too big to disappear, not right. too big to fail, but too big to disappear. And so what I think buyers need to realize is that there is going to be a new set point for home values. Maybe it's not going to be the layer that it was in some of the areas that had huge growth without the fundamentals for that demand. You know, mm-hmm. there's places clearly that everybody's seeing a real correction, Austin, Texas, Idaho. You know, there's areas that we're seeing real correction, but then there's parts of Florida, there's Manhattan, New York City, parts of the suburbs of New York City, where there's no inventory. Prices are staying strong. Right. And there's still some very large trades of certain kinds of homes that clearly they're at a discount. There's fewer interested parties than there were before, but it doesn't mean that you're getting this 50% discount that everybody's kind of expecting. And there isn't uncertainty, I think, but I think that on the heels of the uncertainty, there's people who still created real wealth during this last boom that mm-hmm. have the wealth. And then there's also people who are saying, hey, I'm old enough to remember interest rates being 13%, 17%, 18%. And that like at one point it was like a deal to get a 10% interest rate. And that also those who use private wealth managers, who use certain banks, are still able to get, you know, something in the fives as far as their rate is concerned. Mm-hmm. And so I think that everybody just needs to kind of remember that this is a cycle. We're up. We're also going through a large correction from the perspective of the way people interact with each other, the way people live, the way people buy, the way, you know, what people are looking for, where they want to be. Migration is now an option for people that it wasn't before. Right. I think we're going to continue to see some migration as well. So for buyers out there, I think you need to know your market, you need to know where you are, and you need to be not too bearish on what's happening. And then you also have to be prepared for the long haul. If your market went up double, triple digits during this last boom, you need to kind of look at where realistically the trough is going to be, and then expect to be in there, not be here. There's going to be like a, you know, like anything, it's like the stock market. The stock market over time, it dips, but it always goes in the right direction. And that's the same with the housing market. It's going to continue to go this way. And clearly, if you're in a market, again, that appreciated at such a rapid rate without an understanding of where the hell these buyers were coming from, that is a market that you're going to have to put like your real thinking cap on where those numbers are.
Absolutely. I know. And what's crazy is that, you know, this is going to be a normalcy. We're kind of going to see some normal stuff happening, and hopefully it comes down, right? Maybe even just a little bit, but I think not appreciation wise, like what we're speaking the same language, it's going to continue to tick up. And so if that's the case, educating your buyers is the biggest piece of it, and trying to figure out, look, let's get crafty from a lending side. Let's get crafty. What can we do to get you in the door right now? And what your price point is very different, and who the caliber of who you work with is very different from some of the smaller local markets near where we are. But nonetheless, education is still key. But one thing that is something that you're up against too is that next wave of buyers is huge, right? It's even bigger than the baby boomers. So when it comes to how you educate, and you talked about it, like consumers are just doing different things now. Like the way I interact has changed immensely. You know, people have had children during this time, this specific wave of buyers. And so how they need to communicate is different. When it's all on their time, you know, how would you say you are talking to buyers that are this next generation? And have you had to pivot from how you communicate with other folks? The question I'm trying to ask?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, you have to be super armed with data from over the years, what you've seen in the past, what you saw, where this moment feels like to you based on your multi-cycle career. You know, like I've been in this cycle, I've seen two phases. I'm in my third phase of a true downturn cycle, maybe fourth phase, because for us, we also had a downturn from 2017 to 20. So basically we had 2008, and then I saw things go up until 2015. Then things started to like level off and drip. You had the last great transaction in 2017. Then we went down. Things were starting to pick up at the end of 2019, beginning of 2020. And then we saw the sharp dip, and then we saw this rise again. So, I mean, so I think when I speak to buyers, and I would say everybody who's speaking to buyers right now needs to reiterate that history always repeats itself. Mm-hmm. This is definitely not the end of the world. That the bad times, while they're lasting a little longer than we remember, there's still no economic real conditions that are going to support a complete and total meltdown that will affect. So the key here is, all right, everybody needs a place to live. And the likelihood that at some point you're going to be renting from the man, so to speak, becomes really high if you don't go ahead and commit to a home and that home purchase. And the people who are out there buying large scale investments have access to different capital at different prices than we do. And so it's kind of, not only is it the American dream, but it's also kind of, from looking at the macro market of real estate, you need to get in there and be an owner.
Right.
Because otherwise you are just going to be paying rent to somebody for the rest of your life.
Right.
Period. And those people who are buying up those properties, they're more and more and more. I was at a seminar over the last week, and you know, every time you turn around, it's somebody who does passive investing in real estate across the country in areas, low income areas. And honestly, that's where the greatest divide is still.
That's huge. So from a marketing side, you do a phenomenal job with your marketing, and I'm sure you have a great team that helps, because it's a lot. I know it's a lot.
It's like a bigger team that helps. No, I'm just kidding. I love my team is amazing. I feel like the best thing about marketing is that it makes everybody's always like, you do a great job with it. And the truth is it's a ton of effort and it's a ton of time, but it's also something you can batch and you can really do in, you know, a day And then drip it out over time. The hardest content to create is the organic content that you do on an everyday basis.
Right. And people, that's really, but that's because people forget to pull their phone out. They're like, oh, I got it. Oh, should remember to capture this. Somebody capture this.
Exactly.
Well, tell us any, so you've, gosh, you've, what is your favorite thing you've done in your career thus far? Because you have accomplished so much, and I know I'm tooting your horn, but from a female to another female, I think it's so good just to talk about these things and have your wins. So tell us, what is a win that you can, that you just really are like, ah, that's a prominent win for me.
I mean, the television show was a huge win. The great thing about Million Dollar Listing was every single day, it was still Million Dollar Listing. You know, every single day you went on set, you were with a real, you know, there was a real producers and there were cameramen and there were audio people and visual. And it was like, it was what was so special about that. And I think that all women need to own how, and I think every person, not just women, but I know this being a woman, every person needs to own that there are some people who are artists and talent, and everybody should treat themselves like talent every once in a while, because the talent and this idea of taking care of yourself so you can truly focus on your art and truly focus on your talent is something really special. And the experience of being a Million Dollar Listing gave me that. Not every day is everybody like worshiping you by any stretch of the imagination, but this idea of having a crew of people around that cares about what you have to say and is like, oh, you need something to drink? Can I get you, you know, your favorite Arnold Palmer? That's like, that was for me, that was like, I've arrived. I'm that, here.
Yeah, you have made it. I love it. Well, how are you juggling the industry right now? And also like life as a mom, you know, I mean, especially a young mom, like, and, but you're also in the city and you're dealing with probably low inventory. So you're trying to hustle a little bit more. How are you juggling all of it?
So, you know, the thing with juggling is you have to decide what you're doing and what you're not doing. I'm in the phase of some expansion, restructuring, making sure that I have a really robust team to handle the business that we're working on right now, and keeping that on brand, surrounding myself with great people. I've been really fortunate that I've attracted incredible people. We've had divine intervention of incredible talent come to us and Kirsten Jordan team, which has been amazing. And then of course there is there's really needs to be an ownership around the fact that my family life, being a female and a woman, no matter what it is, I think I've had, you know, you have a real home administration that needs to be attended to. Mm-hmm. And there's an emotional piece to that, which is of course wanting to be there and wanting to be part of, but then there's also the logistics of just making sure that that's taken care of, and owning that that's its own job, and understanding where you can outsource there has been something that's been really, really important. And I think that, you know, this is the kind of thing where in media training, nobody ever wants you to talk about having a nanny or having real help, because it alienates you to others who don't have the ability to do that. But the truth is that in order to come to work and look nice and show up and be able to work kind of on and off 24/7 is something for a mom of three that requires an understanding that there has to be an infrastructure around this. And I'm really mm-hmm. fortunate that I have an incredible person in the office for this, an incredible person at home. I have family nearby. And so that's really, and then of course, it's just recognizing when it's important for me to be there and when I have to say, guys, I can't be there for that. I'll be there for the other thing, or I'll do your birthday party, but I won't do this.
Right. And you said it too. I mean, that it is, you have to know when you're able to show your talent. Like that to me, like when I'm home, I want to be home, but when I'm on, I want to be on. So it's like, I'm a talent. I can't be talented at all the things all the time, but when I want to be on, I'm able to show my talent and true, because I've set boundaries or I've hired an outsourced or what have you. I love that. I think most people who are trying to juggle, and that's applicable to all, not just us moms, but you know, just think, look, I've put boundaries on this part of my life, or I've done something, I've alleviated something because I had to do something else. So I love that. Well, so tell us kind of where you think the market, what you think it's going to do. And I know we don't have all crystal balls, but, and you probably get asked that all the time, but, and then tell us how you're lending forward this year.
I see the market being exactly kind of like that, this kind of a line. I think it's going to be like this. I think some parts are going to go up a little bit when there's a moment. And then we're really product sensitive here in Manhattan. there have been times in the market where the market was down, but there was a very special product that arrived in a special neighborhood and that sold anyway. So in New York City, there is, and I think that there's very affluent areas of the country where this exists, where you bring real product to the market. And as long as there's still wealth in that area and you're providing value, mm-hmm. you're still going to sell at prices that exceed expectations. So that is something that, you know, I don't know off the top of my head a product that I can think of, but there's some stuff in the West Village that I think will come to market. I think there's going to be some stuff on the Upper East Side and Upper West Side that will come to market. It will be that. Mm-hmm. And it will come. There's always something. Right. And that will completely throw things off. And so that's something you also have to look at when you're the average buyer, which is in Manhattan, the $2 to $3 million buyer, remembering that there's going to be product that's going to be special and it's going to be turnkey. And that's probably going to sell at a premium and you need to recognize that. And right. So that's what I see the market doing. I see the market having kind of this, and then anything that needs renovation is going to be a little bit harder to sell unless it's a very special asset. And right. then anything that has other hair on it or other difficult uncertainty is where it's what's going to suffer. And that's kind of the way it always suffers. The cream rises at the top. You know, the A+ product is easy to sell. And then the rest of it is the stuff that we're like staging and we're painting and we're trying to figure out what to do. And do you give them a credit? What do you do? So that's what I see happening. And I always just stay super positive. There's opportunity right now for buyers, for sellers. If you want to buy, if you want to sell and buy in the same market and you're ready to listen to me about pricing and about positioning your home, we can sell your home. That's for sure. So, and then as far as lending forward, I would say for me, right now, my passion has been, and it continues to be, being a role model for women that want to go back to work, that want to look into real estate as a potential income stream for themselves, specifically as a real estate agent, because that's what I know how to do. But I think there's also potential there in the future to talk about real estate investing for right. women. It's something Glenda Baker, who's a close friend of mine, an incredible, incredible, you know, figure for women out there in real estate right now, and one of the funniest people ever.
Right? Yes, ever. She's awesome. Yeah.
Most recognized voice in real estate. Mm-hmm. She's talking about this is women investing in real estate. And, you know, that's something that real estate investing can set you free if you do it right.
Right.
So it's something that we all need to be thinking about. I bought my first home this summer and I plan on refinancing it for whatever it takes this summer when I'm right. allowed to. And buying my first real true investment property that I'm never going to live in. And that one, you know, this one I'm able to live in for a couple months out of the year, which is amazing, and still have rental income come off of it. And seeing what happens with depreciation, with write-offs, with all of that is something I wish I'd gotten into sooner. Right. I wish I'd experienced in my life. And there's so many ways to do that. But for me, being an inspiration and showing women that it is possible and that you have to throw yourself out there and that you will still have normal children. You will still be part of their lives. You will still have a normal relationship with your husband. You'll still be able to travel, but having a little bit of financial freedom and contributing to the family, if that's something that you desire during these years, especially these child rearing years, is something that's possible. And I totally support it. And I think it's great. And it's worked for me. And I'm very happy that I stayed in the business.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for being on Lending Forward. We appreciate you. And we will absolutely see you more to come.
Thanks again for listening to the Lending Forward podcast powered by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. Don't forget to tune in next week and make sure you subscribe to our channel. Remember, we all play a part in Lending Forward. So go lend something forward today.